Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGab Inao, and welcome to episode 45 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. In this interview, my guest reveals how he started his content marketing agency without realizing the amount of work required to deliver consistent results to his clients, and how he eventually created a master checklist for his business so that nothing falls through the cracks. A checklist that helps to guide his team so that they now deliver consistent results to his clients. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step by step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Vikram Rajan, and he is the co-founder of PhoneBlogger.net. Vikram, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Owen. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Awesome. So what exactly does your company do, and what big pain do you solve for your customers?
Sure. So PhoneBlogger.net is a word-of-mouth marketing service. We work predominantly with law firms, but also with other practicing professionals. And the biggest hurdle for our clients is how to get new clients. And most of our clients get their new clients through word-of-mouth referrals, mm-hmm. very often from other lawyers and from their networking past clients. But it's tough to stay top of mind with all of their referral relationships. Now, the simplest way to stay top of mind is through an email newsletter, but our clients are just way too busy running a practice, running a family, to sit down and think of article ideas and write those articles and then publish it on their website, their blog, and optimize it to make it eye-catchy, search engine friendly, social media friendly, and put all those blog articles and promote it through their social media like LinkedIn and put it together into an email newsletter. So instead of our client having to do that hours and hours each week, instead they just talk to us for a couple of minutes over the telephone where we brainstorm article ideas and they answer frequently asked questions that we brainstorm. They've got bullet points in front of them. They talk to us for 3 or 4 minutes right over the telephone, and we turn their words, including their personality, into optimized, edited blog articles that, with their approval, we publish under their name on their blog, through their LinkedIn and other oriented professional social media, and put it together into an email newsletter. So we call this process phone blogging at phoneblogger.net.
Awesome. I like the way you actually describe the problem and the solution you provide. I love that. So anyways, my listeners always want to get like some context as to, you know, where the business is and, you know, how, you know, what you guys are doing, you know, revenue wise. Mm-hmm. But before we talk about that, you know, how many full-time employees you currently have?
So, I'm full-time with the company. I'm a co-founder of PhoneBlogger.net, and I have a business partner, Mark Bullock, who has an office. I have a home office. His office is in the suburbs of New York City. I live square in the middle of the skyscrapers here in Manhattan. And then we have about 9 to 10 stable freelancers, independent contractors, who do around 15 to 20 hours with us each week. So it's a pretty sizable operation that we've got going at PhoneBlogger.
Awesome. And what was last year's revenue? What you probably plan to generate this year? Any estimates on that?
Sure. We were a little bit under $300K last year, and we should definitely be over $350K this coming year, if not way over that. We've got about 70 clients. You can kind of do the math. We're a pretty simple and small operation, but as we'll talk about it, I think even small companies can benefit from systematizing and documentation, and definitely as an owner, as a co-founder who likes to travel a lot with his wife, it gives me the flexibility and the mobility and the freedom to not only enjoy life traveling, but also be out there hitting the pavement, bringing in new business through sales.
So the goal of this interview is to talk about how you systematize the business, and which allows you to now, you know, be free and travel with your wife, like you mentioned. But before you got to this point, there was, you know, a time where it was not so systematized, where there was chaos. And so let's go back there. Let's take the listener back in that journey. And so can you, you know, describe what you think was so far the lowest point in the business, and describe how bad it got?
Well, we are a Google Apps company, so our email is Gmail, but corporate Gmail. And I think the good thing about being at the lowest point is that we had Google search on our side, because that was extremely important to find all the random contact and login information for our clients that were buried in disparate random emails. And nothing was organized. So everything took much longer than it needed to. Things were falling through the cracks, so we were missing deadlines. And ultimately, we're a publishing company. So for us to miss a deadline on behalf of a client kind of defeats the purpose of having someone handle your blogging and your social media and email newsletter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you wanted to be inconsistent, you'd just be inconsistent by yourself. You know, so it was like stupid and silly. And, you know, obviously it's not what we wanted to do for our clients. We were letting them down. But we started phoneblogger.net not out of some kind of a harebrained idea of, let's make some money at this. It was actually a favor to our clients. So we wanted to do right for them from the beginning. At the start, we didn't really have a name for this. It wasn't really the systematized process as it is now. It was just a simple concept. Hey, talk to us over the telephone. We'll audio record you and turn your words into an article, approve it, and we'll run with it, which is still what phone blogging is today. But it became chaos, where when we started bringing on other people, I'd have to forward them email, they'd lose email. I mean, it was just a ridiculous environment, which I think a lot of companies can relate to, where their document management process is essentially a cluttered inbox.
So on one hand, the first problem was having all, you know, keeping all this, your clients' information, usernames and passwords, not having a, you know, organized place to keep that information because you had to do work on their behalf. And then on the other hand, the other issue was, you know, you mentioned this during the pre-interview, how you guys had this idea, but you didn't even know how much involved it was going to be. And then on top of that, now you also had the issue of knowing that you had to bring people on board as well. So how do you bring people on board when, you know, you're still learning how to deliver the thing? So let's talk about, I want to ask you a question. Do you remember specifically, you know, at that time when you realized, man, the business had to be systematized? You know, talk about what specifically happened. And you was like, nah, I have to change this.
Well, countless examples, really, because whenever we needed user information, like a login, like we would log in on behalf of our clients into their LinkedIn, obviously with their approval, permission, and with their wanting us to do so. It was our service. But in the beginning, it was just a favor to them, so we'd lose the passwords, and, you know, our clients barely knew their own passwords.
Sorry to cut you short, but when you say favor to them, I understand what you mean. I'm looking
meaning that we were their marketing consultant, and we were advising them on a marketing strategy and helping them develop a marketing action plan.
Oh, okay.
They were too busy to do it themselves. We said, hey, why don't we just, handle the articles on your behalf? And it was just something that we would do on the side, and we actually didn't charge them anything extra in the beginning because, you know, we thought, how hard can it be? How complicated can it be? Well, it turns out, literally and figuratively, there are a lot of I's to dot, a lot of T's to cross, literally, since we do the editing of their blog articles. Thankfully, T's come crossed when you type it. That was pretty much our whole system, that, hey, we'll figure it out. And then it became an even greater challenge that you kind of alluded to, was as we started bringing on other people. In the beginning, we had one associate. Her name is Marta. She's still with us, and she is a friend of one of our longtime clients. So we felt kind of she's part of the family, as we put it. And in the beginning, we kind of threw her to the wolves in the sense that it was a side business. It was just
jump in there and do it.
And we were like, yeah, figure it out. And how hard could it be? And, you know, there's a lot of little things. And I think anyone who goes to the exercise of actively and actually documenting a process as they can through your system will actually see that no matter how detailed you get, you can get way more detailed, because it's not only knowing that somebody else can do something, but it's also the double checking and the quality assurance that someone actually did do what they said they were going to do. So that checks and balances and the accountability of people not only doing the task, but recording that they did the task and recording that they did the task well and have somebody else checking that task to ensure that it got done well, basically means that every one task actually has like four meta tasks around it.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of making that up on the fly, but I can kind of see that because, and I'm sure you know that from your expertise, but it's, we see that all the time, that it's not only just the task, it's the reporting of the task, it's the checking on the task, and the reporting of the checking of the task. And I'm sure there are other meta steps as well. So when we started doing this process of documenting, even that was like, oh, how hard can it be? And then it became more and more granular. And we've solved that in a variety of ways. Maybe we could talk about
it. Yeah, so what was the now we've discussed kind of the problem that was going on at that point. So what was the very first thing you did to solve the problem? And I think during the pre-interview, you mentioned the story of how you came into the idea of creating the solution for it. So I want you to talk about the story as well. What happened about your wife, you and your wife going on honeymoon? Share that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So yesterday was our three-year wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
So thank you. So this was literally just about 3 years and a month ago, or so to speak, because our honeymoon was a month after our wedding. And my concept was when I came back from the honeymoon, I wanted phoneblogger.net to be my main brand since I was moving into Manhattan and I was recreating my network. It was a good opportunity for rebranding. Well, I turned to my wife and said, look, I'm living in chaos, inbox chaos. We need, at the very least, a master checklist of all of our client information, of all the little things that we need to gather from them, and we need to keep it in one place. And that has evolved into what we now call our master checklist. And I had full intention of basically writing every little thing down on the long flight from New York to New Zealand, where we had our honeymoon.
Yeah.
Well, there were some great movies, and I enjoy sleeping. So between the movies and sleeping, I never did that. So it was procrastination number one. And I said, look, you know, as much as I'm on a honeymoon, I'll have some downtime. You know, while my wife is at the pool, I can, you know, sit down and write a checklist out. Didn't do that either. So it was actually, again, about 3 years to the day that we were driving in the South Island of New Zealand, going to the glaciers that they have in New Zealand, which is actually really beautiful. And it's a curvy, windy road, so I had to pay attention, and I believe I'm driving on the opposite side of the road. I have to double-check that.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it is, because I remember kind of turning to the left, and, you know, after spending 10 days with my new bride, you know, we kind of ran out of things to say to each other. So it's like, what are we doing? So, and, you know, we're constantly talking about phone blogger and my business. And my wife offered, hey, you've been procrastinating about doing this checklist. How about I open up the iPad and you just start telling me all the little things that you do with a client when you bring them on, which is now our intake process. Funny that she asked that, because if she were doing it over the telephone, that would be very similar to the phone blogging process. So I took her up on that offer and said, great. So she opened up a very simple note-taking app. It wasn't anything sophisticated. And I just started dictating all the little things that we do. I'm like, all right, great. When I call up a client, I need to ask for this and this. And we went into pretty granular detail. And she emailed that to me. And then I kind of arranged that into a Google document, which is basically like Microsoft Word on the internet. We later realized that it would probably be simpler as a spreadsheet, so we started using Google Sheets. And now it's evolved into a Google Sheets that has about maybe a dozen tabs, like worksheets of Excel, so that each tab is a different thing, and every client has that. And that's basically our low-tech makeshift dashboard, where everything for a client is in one location. Now, we don't actively use Google Sheets right now as our project management tool in terms of the dynamic part of the process, which is the article, interviewing,
yeah,
and editing, publishing, and promotion. That we use a different tool now called Smartsheet. Before that, we used Wrike, W-R-I-K-E. And these are just project management tools to basically create a simple checklist. And it's a communication tool among our associates as well, so that we know that everything gets done and everything can everyone can be accountable to one another, so that the process moves along. And that was basically the beginning, though. I mean,
During the pre-interview, you mentioned how the master checklist actually allows clients to basically enter all the information about themselves and help to solve your administrative headaches. Talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah, well, what I like about the Google Sheets is that it's co-editing, meaning it's live, private, but you can log on to your master checklist. I can log on to the same document, and we can see each other type in real time. So when I say, great, Mr. Client, put in your LinkedIn username, here you could literally just type it in right there. Or if they're just slower than what I prefer them to be, I can ask them for it, and I can type it in myself, press enter, and they see it instantly, magically. And it's pretty cool. It wows them if they're not familiar with Google Sheets. And also from efficient communication, they know I spelled it right, et cetera. And those things mean a lot, especially when, you know, we do what we do. If the, one letter off, and obviously the whole thing is a waste of time. So it's a lot simpler just to communicate through that type of a platform.
Yeah. And so the first thing you did back then was, you and your wife talked about what you were doing. You created an intake process, and then you turned it into a spreadsheet that, basically your staff could, your clients could actually enter in their information. You had it all gathered in one place. And that was the starting point. But the next thing what was the very next thing you did to improve upon that as well?
Then we had to actually start using it. So yeah. I guess the very next, we had to start bringing, at that point we only had about a dozen clients, or maybe at most 20 clients. Now we have over 70. So we had to go back and actually create it. And we needed to really flesh it out. Kind of as I said before, no matter how detailed you think you can get, there's more detail to be created. Mm-hmm. And now we have different versions of checklists. Sometimes, when we bring on a new associate in terms of training, sometimes it can be a little overwhelming to see all the little things right away. So, and also even for clients, it can be a little bit overwhelming for them. It's sometimes good for them to know all the little things that we do, but sometimes a broad brush is preferable. So we have a launch checklist, for example, all the things that we do during the first month. And with Smartsheet, you can collapse it like a tree, so you can kind of show the bulk items, and then each section we can kind of open it up like an accordion and kind of see all the subtasks. We could hide the subtasks more out of aesthetics. So in terms of the very next thing, we started creating all these other checklists that all kind of integrate and match each other. And it's an ongoing process. We're still not done. We just unveiled our second version of our Smartsheet checklist to actually make it simpler than it was. In some ways, we were actually getting too granular and too detailed in the checklist. Some of it was taken out and actually put into documentation that supported it, but didn't need to be so granular because it was kind of getting in the way of efficiency. So detail for detail's sake is not necessary, but I think it needs to be detailed enough with supporting documentation so that our associates can refer to it. But after a while, they know what they're doing, and we know that it got done. We can infer that through the process. So we're trying to make it easy. In the beginning, we created our checklist between me and Mark. We'd stay up into the wee hours and create these things. And it was a mistake. We probably should have involved MARTA at that point and then our other associates into the checklist or documentation process.
Awesome. So let's dive right in and talk about the specifics about the systems that you have in place that enables the business to run without you. And so you've already talked about how the master checklist is what clients see initially, and it's a static. You mentioned that it's a static information. They enter it once, and you have all the information that you need in order to go to their blog, their LinkedIn page, their social media, all the things you need to go in there and enter it once. And then you said there's a different part, which is the dynamic aspect of it. Let's talk about that. What do you mean when you said during the pre-interview there's a dynamic aspect of what you do?
Sure. Well, the dynamic aspect is what I refer to when we use Smartsheet. The dynamic aspect of what we do as opposed to static. Static means that the data is pretty much there and doesn't really change. And we, like login information, for example, you're not constantly changing your LinkedIn password. Now, if you do change it, you have to alert us and we have to update the master checklist. But literally on a weekly basis and multiple times a week, we are updating your Smartsheet. Your Smartsheet basically is a real-time report, a real-time checklist of where your article is in the process. Now, truth be told, our clients don't necessarily need real-time information, and they're not logging on to their Smartsheet pretty much without us. However, if they ever want to know on an hour or day basis where their where their article is in our checklist, we can tell them. Basically, multiple associates can be working on the same account or same client, and potentially even on the same article, because it goes through multiple levels of quality assurance and proofreading to make sure not only grammar, typo, but also some blogging best practices and SEO-oriented optimization is being done to the article. So as different people touch that article, they're checking off different aspects of that checklist, and that's per article. So some of our clients are doing 2 articles a month, some are doing 4 articles a month.
Yeah.
So we're doing hundreds of articles a month at this point, which basically means, Smartsheet is being used throughout the day, every day, and it's constantly changing, and it's a way for associates to communicate with each other instead of randomly sending emails. It's another thing that we're trying to reduce is, A, the amount of emails between our associates, and as well as the amount of random or one-off emails between our associates, because we're not a random one-off company. Basically, we are a repetition company.
Yeah.
While the product literally is custom and different, it's still a blog article, and it's still a LinkedIn post, and it's still an email newsletter.
Yeah.
That doesn't really change. So we shouldn't have any surprises in terms of like, oh, I didn't realize we needed an image for the article. It's like, of course we need an image for the article. Oh, I didn't realize we're supposed to put the description. Of course we're supposed to. So these are repetitive tasks. And even those rare one-offs, we want to build into the process where we can anticipate or even ask our client for these things before they have to tell us. For example, if a client is doing a seminar next month, well, we should be asking them, hey, by the way, are you doing any upcoming presentations? Or if they have new contacts that they need to enter into their LinkedIn or their Constant Contact email newsletter platform, well, we can preemptively ask them instead of us being surprised that they have new contacts for us. Even though that may not happen every time, we ought to ask and kind of automate certain processes in that sense. Okay, so that's what I mean by.
So let me see if I can even break it down a little bit for the listeners. When the interviews comes, the audio recording, it gets triggered in by your customer. How does that work? Let's start from the audio recording coming in first.
Sure. So the audio recording coming in, basically, we schedule the phone blogging calls with our clients.
Okay.
So it would be wonderful when the time comes when our clients use the phone blogger app and call us and record on their own. That DIY, do-it-yourself model, most clients don't really do, none of our clients do, because they prefer it's scheduled and we call them. So when we call them, we click record at a certain time of the phone call. And once we click the recording, then we send it to the transcription team. So that's the beginning. Now, some of our clients don't do audio recording. They're pros at the process. They like writing, or they have associates who write articles. So we call them phone blogger pro. And pro is a wonderful play on words. It's a great ego stroke. But really, the pro really refers to the fact that they are providing us content, and we are promoting the content on their behalf.
Yeah.
Now, there's another PRO word in there, which is proofing, which is PRO. So they promote, they provide, we proof and promote, and thus they are a pro at the process, which is another PRO word. So phone blogger pro, we had to now create a checklist, or, you know, how did we get the content from them? Did they email us a draft?
Yeah.
Or was it a telephone interview? And usually that's kind of the two main, and there are other ways. But those two main aspects we needed to know, that there is an input, which is why we call the primary liaison a client editor, not an article editor anymore, or we used to call them interviewing editors, because we realized that some of our clients don't need an interview. They really just need us to edit and optimize their draft article, which could be an email that they sent a client that they're copying and pasting to us, removing any private sensitive information. You know, if you ever write an email to a client and it's longer than 2 or 3 paragraphs, most likely that's a blog article in disguise, and we can optimize it and edit it into a marketing piece. So those are the things that we do at Phone Blogger. So we have to know that there are multiple ways. So that gets triggered a section in the Smartsheet. Every client gets 1 Smartsheet,
yeah.
And they're just different parts to it. So it's a repetition of the same set of tasks that are, you know, at this point, is over 300 to 400 rows, which is, you know, a pretty long document. Thankfully, we're able to collapse it into sizable chunks where it's really you know, 3 or 4 or 5 sections that we can easily open up.
So the recording is done, the recording comes in, and that triggers the task for that very article for that particular client. And then at each stage, there are different phases of tasks that you guys have to do. And at each stage, the people who are responsible for their specific task now get triggered to start doing the work.
So they get notified.
Yeah, they get notified. So I get that. And then you said also within the system, it allows your quality assurance editors to communicate with everyone who is involved in doing the article. Talk about that.
Exactly. So the beauty of our smart sheet is that instead of random emails having to be sent or random questions having to be sent, ideally, our associates are using the reporting function of Smartsheet, which basically aggregates or brings together multiple Smartsheets into one to-do list. Basically meaning, let's say you're working on 5 different clients and you're a social media promoter for us. Well, for client 1, you have to promote this article on LinkedIn and Google+. For client 2, it's going to be Facebook and Twitter. For client 3, it's LinkedIn and Twitter, etc. And you have all these tasks to do per client. Instead of you having to open up 5 different Smartsheets, you can create a report that automatically notifies you when different clients have tasks that you need to do. And that's automatically triggered as one person does the next thing. So when they check off an item, basically the next item is due, and they set a due date for the next associate. So it's kind of like a relay race. You're passing the baton.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. And ultimately, the article editor or the client editor is very much the quarterback. He or she is interfacing with the client, so they know the totality of the process.
Okay, and so the client editor, as you mentioned, they're interfacing with client, and as well as making sure that everybody who is responsible for the individual parts is moving along nicely, so that at the end of the day, you can deliver the product. You also mentioned that one of the things you guys do is you have every week you get on the phone with your team and have a Monday meeting. You actually called it a Monday morning management meeting. Talk about that.
Sure, aka the vitals call.
Yeah.
The vitals call is extremely vital to the process. It's really the time that I'm able to go into each client and really know what's happening. It has a couple of purposes. The metaphor that I use is imagine a doctor with a clipboard coming into a patient, and he or she's got a clipboard and basically wants to get the vital signs of the patient. And with those few vital signs, the doctor's able to infer a whole number of issues, red flags, and diagnose issues and hopefully preemptively prevent things. Likewise, I'm going in there kind of triage to get those vital signs, notice any red flags, and solve anything preemptively, predict anything, etc. And basically there are about 6-7 different things that we want to check for each client in terms of where the articles are in the process, different due dates, etc. As basically a distillation of what our Smartsheet shows. But for me to literally go into every client's Smartsheet and kind of see it would just take too much time. So instead, we hop on the phone, and it's staggered. Not everyone needs to be on the phone call the whole time.
Yeah.
But kind of the editorial teams kind of stagger so that it's really an interfacing between the client editor and the promotion professional. And it's a conversation. And I'm in the midst of it, and we're checking on vitals and making sure that every one of our clients are on point. And there may be issues that we need to resolve in terms of scheduling issues or brainstorming new article ideas. And it really helps us improve our process, and really it's geared toward client service to make sure that we're not just relying on documentation and manuals, but rather, you know, there is live communication. Because everything is so systematized and systematic, we can literally blast through over 70 clients in about an hour time. And if we take even, you know, more detail on some issue, it's max an hour and a half. And we all have appointments usually at around 10:30 or sometimes even 10 a.m. So we are extremely disciplined on having a very quick, efficient meeting. So it's a Monday morning management meeting, but it's also a huddle to kind of get things done. And we know what needs to get going. And very little live communication by phone is needed. We can't meet in person because we're a virtual company with associates around the country. And obviously there's emails going back and forth, but vast majority of it is through Smartsheet, where it's pretty systematic.
Awesome. And so you also mentioned that due to the nature of your business, you know, not everything can actually be codified into a checklist. So you need room for creativity as well. So to talk about that. I wanted to dive into that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a checklist evangelist. So as much as we can codify, the better. And even the creative process of writing and editing, I feel, has a process. You know, any professional writer knows that he or she has to have some discipline, and it can't just be on the his or her whim and fancy of, oh, they'll just write whenever they feel like it. Reporters know they're on deadline. Authors are on contract. So you got to get your act together, and you got to build in habits and routine and inspirational techniques to get the job done, because this is not just for fun. We've got deadlines to do. So even in the creative process of writing, which is for us really editing, we have a process. Now the process are more guidelines and thumb rules and way and mindset, but it is a way for me to help editors think it through in terms of how they're shaping an article.
So what I get from that is that in a situation where you cannot actually give them a step-by-step like GPS kind of, you know, of what to do, like a procedure, you're basically coming up with a rule or decision-making guideline that says, okay, for this very thing, because there's some element of creativity that we cannot actually tell you step-by-step what to do, but use this guideline as a way to make your own decisions.
Correct. It's a great way of putting it. It's those guidelines that help govern the creative process so that we can be somewhat systematic and know that the end result is there. And, you know, for example, every article...
You beat me to the punch because I was about to be like, for example. So.
Yeah. So, for example, every article goes through a QA process, a quality assurance process, to make sure that it's as optimized as possible. And what does that mean? To make it eye-catchy, to make it social media friendly, SEO friendly, to make sure that it's powerful. Those things are making sure it has a punchy title, to make sure that it has a very strong opening teaser, that the first sentence is optimized because that's what shows up as a Google description, for example. Yeah. To make sure that the article is eye-catchy so it's not long monolithic paragraphs, and that has bullet points and a call to action at the end, because it's supposed to be a responsive article, meaning it elicits response, comments, or a sale. So there are literally 23 different things we can do to an article on our checklist. However, we can't always do all 23 things to an article just by nature or by default or by author preference, which is another aspect. Author voice preference, or AVP, is very important because we need the article to sound like the author, which is our client, not like us.
Yeah.
So if an article met all 23 guidelines, then it would literally sound like a National Enquirer tabloid article, or nowadays we're familiar with like the clickbait articles of BuzzFeed, where it would be like the 23 secret ways to do this, and it's like seven, you know, ways to do this, or you won't believe the top three ways. And not every lawyer wants to sound like that.
Yeah.
Like most lawyers don't want to sound like that. We're the ones kind of pushing the limit a little bit to help them be a little bit more sales-oriented or salesy, so a little bit more BuzzFeed or Enquirer-oriented. But we have to make sure it's not overboard. So we have to make sure it's not so bold and flashy, literally, in the article with so many different colors and fonts and exclamation marks and all that stuff that sometimes gets a little too much, especially for a conservative professional. So our point is we have guidelines. So we make sure that the checklist is there, that these 23 things are addressed and considered, meaning did you consider that we have 2 to 3 bold sentences in the article? Now, sometimes we just can't, or the client says, I don't want any bold. Well, we now know by checklist that at least bolding was considered and thus addressed. Doesn't mean it was done. It was addressed. It was thought about.
Yeah.
So that's the guideline. So these are 23 guidelines, if you will. Now, there are some things that we really do insist on, but we can't say it's always going to be done for because it may not be necessary, may not be wanted or warranted.
Yeah. So this is a question where I want you to kind of like imagine your business like a conveyor belt, where on one end is somebody who has the pain you described, is not yet your customer, but on the other end is that person who has actually gone through your system and become your customer and is out there raving about you, telling other attorneys about the services using and literally helping you generate even more new customers. But there are different parts that are different parts and systems working together behind the scene to allow that transformation to happen. So I want to give the listener kind of like a, you know, a quick overview of all the different parts of the business and what's happening.
Sure. There are about five different parts, if you will, which correspond really to the smart sheet. So very much we see our process like a conveyor belt. We basically look at us as a manufacturing company. We're manufacturing blog articles. So it does definitely go through a process. And it's mass customized, which is kind of a Dell computer type term, or like think of it like a Chinese food menu or what Subway does to your sandwich. And if you imagine a Subway sandwich is basically a conveyor belt. There are guidelines. Not every sandwich is going to have all the veggies and all the different meats, but you can mix and match, and at the end, you get what you want. And it's a custom sandwich through a systematic process. Similarly, with us, there are basically five main areas. One aspect is the content input, as you asked me about, is either through recording or by email.
Mm-hmm.
The second area is what we call article editing, which has those guidelines that I talked about in terms of the checklist. The third area is the client editing, which is making sure that the client is happy with the article and that they approve the article. So you can call the client approval process. Then the fourth, it gets published onto their blog website and has its own quality checks to make sure it came out properly when we publish the article and add a copyright approved image and optimize the heck out of everything. And then the fifth process is the promotion, which is kind of maybe 5A and 5B or close six steps. The fifth is promoting it through social media, making sure it's on the platforms that our client prefers.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be every platform, but it changes. So, you know, some want LinkedIn only, some want LinkedIn and Twitter, some et cetera, et cetera. So, and then the sixth aspect or the second aspect of promotion is the email newsletter. And again, that has its own process of all the little things that have to happen in the email newsletter, which comes out.
We got disconnected for a second and we're back. And so you were talking about at the stage of the conveyor belt where you guys have delivered the content and now you're doing promotion part. Take it from there.
So basically, the fifth part is our promotion, which is the social media aspect. So then we have a whole checklist to make sure that the right hashtags are being used on the different platforms and make sure that we're attending to the right platforms per client. Part of the promotion is also the email newsletter. Now, the email newsletter only happens once a month while we're doing articles often every other week for our clients. So the first five parts, 2 weeks for most of our clients, and the sixth part, or 5B, depending on how you want to think of it, happens once a month. Now, of course, if a client is doing four articles a month, we just have to compress it, rinse and repeat as necessary.
Yeah.
One article, of course, we're just doing the whole five parts, and then 5B or 6 once a month as well. So we just, that's basically the five parts of our conveyor belt, if you will.
So you basically mentioned kind of what's happening behind the scene on the production part when you have a customer. I'm just curious, are there any kind of systems you have in place to even attract the person who has this pain, you know, who has not even heard about you yet? So I'm basically trying to figure out if you have any, like, engine for your marketing to get people in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, we haven't really entered so much into the world of marketing automation, which is a whole different world in terms of online marketing and email-based marketing in terms of marketing automation. Most of our clients come through our word-of-mouth referrals.
Okay.
The video on phoneblogger.net begins with the question or the premise, what if every one of your clients brings you one more client, and essentially how your business can double continuously. That's very often how we're getting our clients through the word-of-mouth referrals from our current clients.
Do you have anything in place for that to basically engineer that word-of-mouth referral?
We do. I mean, we don't have a paid incentive or an affiliate program in any formal sense of it. However, we have kind of opportunities out there where we're able to benefit others through their word of mouth. But with our clients, very much, we do a lot of seminars a month. I do about at least 4 to 6 seminars a month, all of them where I'm invited by colleagues to present at different associations, different bar associations.
Oh, so your clients invite you to come and present and do like education to
correct.
Their contacts.
Every one of them are active in their own groups.
Okay.
So that not only helps brand Phone Blogger and it helps attract new clients. And once they're in the room, it's very simple for them to turn to their neighbor and say, hey, I use these guys. You should use them too. Or when they're literally introducing us, just say, hey, phoneblogger.net is great and you should use these guys. And quite frankly, there's, you know, nothing better than a testimonial from a client live in the room. You know, I don't really have to say much or really sell myself. Just need to, at that point, educate, provide value, provide ways for them to even do it themselves. And the more I can say, hey, look, you know, you could do it yourself. All you need is another hour or two a week, and here's everything that you can do it yourself. And invariably, they're saying, another hour or two a week? That's ridiculous, you know. I don't know where that 25th hour in the day is going to come from. And that's why they become clients of ours.
Yeah, I just wanted to connect the dots for the listeners. So now we're basically taking them through your conveyor belt in the sense where you're getting customers from your referrals, but the way you're engineering the referrals is by having like seminars with your customers so they can invite other people and get, you know, education-based marketing and learn about it. And oh, by the way, while the people are learning, obviously your customers are there to tell them, okay, they do actually do deliver because we are using them. So that's how you're getting people in. When people come in, they're going to go through your intake process, as you mentioned earlier, where it's a static part of the process where you get all the additional information that you need from them. And then after that, it now gets onboarded to the 5 different phases per each article that you mentioned. So you're listening, you've gotten the entire funnel. Let's move on to the next question. I'm curious, you know, what challenges did you even experience when you initially tried to create systems for the business? And let's talk about how you probably even solved them.
Yeah, I kind of alluded it in the beginning. The number one challenge or mistake, I should say, is we didn't include our team, our associates, in the process. Now, I don't think our team could have created a process on their own. I think everyone's kind of focused on what they're doing. You know, it's while they're each brilliant in their own way, they don't necessarily have – can you hear me okay?
I can hear you clearly. Go ahead.
Yeah, great. I don't think they have the totality or even the vision that I would want of what PhoneBlogger.net should be and can be and ought to be for its clients from a marketing and strategy perspective. So I think it was definitely healthy and helpful for Mark and I to sit down and write out the detail. I just don't know if we needed to have gone to such granular detail. We should have probably brought in Marta and the rest of our associates now into the process.
Yeah.
And that's what we did this time around. So we were in a very long private beta and testing process. I think we did it for maybe 6 or 7 months. Basically, I got very antsy. My partner, Mark, is much more, he's an IT technician, so he's used to doing QA bug testing for software and other technology. So he's got that patience and that engineering mindset. He's an engineer by training. And while I believe in checklists and systems from a management science perspective, I'm extremely hot to trot and ready to go and trigger happy. And, you know, this would have been unveiled really, you know, 6-7 months ago. But he kept in my mind what I call delaying it. But really it was testing it. And really what it was bringing in different team members for them to basically use this new version and to tweak it and to customize it and adapt it to how they work. And as each person did that, we couldn't take every suggestion or else it would be a hodgepodge and by definition not have standards. But however, everyone was able to have an input and everyone was also able to have a sneak preview with it, which made them feel good and buy-in was necessary. So we didn't do it from a personality, psychological manipulation perspective to just get their buy-in. We did it legitimately because we wanted their input. We needed their input. We needed our system to be real and really reflect what they go through with clients, to make sure it's flexible enough for all the client ridiculousness that get thrown at us, and to make sure that it's truly streamlined and effective and flexible while at the same time systematic. And that we didn't want it to be so rigid and draconian where essentially people are just going to ignore it anyway and just get the job done for the client. Our associates truly do help our clients and go overboard in a good way and take the initiative to help our clients in a variety of ways, which basically means they would kind of throw the checklist out the window and just do it, which obviously defeats the purpose. So from that aspect, we needed the system to be flexible.
You also mentioned that another challenge too was not everybody on the team was familiar with a lot of this project management systems that you have. How did you kind of describe that challenge, and also maybe how you kind of solved it too?
Yeah, I mean, on one aspect, we have it where our associates don't have MBAs, but on the other hand, I think it's healthy because they can kind of remove the BS jargon that very often that MBAs can kind of present. So while there's a lot of useful insight, it can also be kind of hindrance. But because they don't have project management training in the truest sense of it, it became a situation where we had to create a system that was real and realistic, which meant everything I just talked about. It has standards, has a process, but it's also flexible and realistic. So it posed a challenge in the sense that, they're not familiar with Gantt charts and project management, resource management. But I think for us, I think that's almost healthier because we weren't surrounded by yes men and people who just talked in buzzwords and jargon and basically BS'd the whole problem way, and it wasn't,
I think what I'm hearing from that is because not every one of them were really into this initially, it forced you guys to really figure out a way to make the use of your systems even simpler.
Correct. It made it simple, and that's a good way of looking at it. And it was real. And I think both are important, and I think, and because we weren't trying to force anything on them, we really wanted their input, I'm happier for that because I think it's a healthier way of operating.
Yeah, definitely. And so one question I have now is, you guys started, creating systems and all that for the business. But at that point, how did you know which, systems or processes to first create for the business? Like, what did you use as your yardstick to say, okay, this is where we need to start creating a system for now, and this is what we need to create a system for next? Do you understand my question? I'm trying to figure out how you went about it.
It really became out of need.
Okay.
For us, because whenever we needed it, we created the process. I'll be honest that it wasn't this big strategy of systemizing for the sake of.
When it hurts, you create a system.
Yeah, when it hurts, you create a system. When we realize we are delving into chaos, very similar to the New Zealand story of how the master checklist came about. It was like, look, we're in chaos. We need to do something about it. Right now, for example, is our training process. Our training process is a little bit chaotic right now, and if my associates listen to this, they'll say it's a lot in chaos right now. And so we are improving, and we're having more, emphasis on creating a manual and creating a training system. And more than training, it's really a learning system and accountability so that we know someone did learn it and that they have used it and that they, again, use it on a consistent basis, which will come back to Smartsheet. But that training and learning process, I think, is extremely important for us to do because as we're growing, we're bringing on new associates. I think it's great. Everyone helps each other. But we also need a way for people to learn and to show that they've learned and thus use Smartsheet, et cetera, that much more effectively and consistently.
Yeah, so you've talked a lot about some of the tools you're using. I'm just curious, precisely when it comes to actually like documenting step-by-step how something should be done, what do you guys actually use? What tools do you guys, besides Smartsheet, to actually manage the workflow of the task? What other tools you guys are using?
As I mentioned, it's really the three that I've talked about. We started with Google Sheets, and then I grew that and started using a system called Rike.
Okay.
That wasn't as flexible and nimble as we wanted it to be, and so we moved over to Smartsheet, which is essentially the project management system. So we didn't really use anything from a documentation perspective. It was us writing everything out, and we just wrote it out in a spreadsheet checklist form.
Oh, okay. And so you've not only have created a kind of a way in which you're guiding them on what the work they need to do next and so on and so forth, but I'm also curious to know how do you track and verify the results that they end up delivering to your employees?
Sure.
Delivering to your customers, sorry.
To our clients, yeah, that's what I figured. It's a QA process, within that conveyor belt analogy that you talked about are those subtasks where we are checking that the task was done, and that falls on to the QA process where we know the article editor, who is actually the person editing the article, I think I may have misspoke earlier, client editor is very often the person interviewing. There's an article editor who works on that article and then sends it over to the QA editor to proofread it and to make sure that all the quality checklists, the blogging standards are taken care of, and then he or she sends it over to the article editor who interfaces with the client. And so because it goes to who inevitably is going to be reading that article with the client, so because it goes through three parts, we're able to have those checks and balances. So that for us, proofreading is the double checking to make sure everything got done properly from an article standpoint, and likewise, you have a similar process with social media.
You also mentioned also on top of that too, every client, they always have a publishing schedule as well. That way, everything is on track to be delivered at a specific time. Okay. And so now that the business runs without you, what would you say has been the longest time you've been away from it, actually?
The longest time that I've been away, usually after about a week to 10 days of a vacation, I get antsy because I really do enjoy my business. And I think in terms of traveling, which my wife and I do quite a bit, it more than quantity of time, it's quality of time. So we're usually running off to some place that barely has internet connection.
Yeah.
So, or we're somewhere around the world. So it began, with the New Zealand honeymoon where we're literally 12-hour difference and in the middle of nowhere taking a helicopter to a glacier. So there's just no way for me to check in with the team. To the African safari that we did this past January for about 2 weeks, and again we're in the middle of nowhere, the guides had cell phones, but I didn't, so I had no idea or no way of checking in with the team. So anywhere from like a week to 10 days, we're usually taking a trip about every 3 months to kind of get away from everything. I'll basically have no communication with my team at that point. And luckily my partner can do the vitals call because I think that's obviously vital to what we do. But on a day-to-day basis, more than even the systemization and the documentation, it's really the team. It's the people. It's our associates. Because they care, because they want to do a good job, because they don't want things to fall through the cracks and they do want to do right and great by the client, that's when all these systems become important and are used and are improved. I think if it were just the systems, we'd get the amount of enthusiasm that we get at some of the fast food chains where, it's really, they're going through the motions and the passion, the enthusiasm, and the initiative. If it's not there, then the system, is barely done. And if it were checked off, well, we don't know if it was done well, or even if it was done at all. We're just kind of checking it off and lying.
I totally get that. And so, how would you say that the company has been transformed as a result of systematizing business? I mean, this is just basically you reflecting on back then and kind of now.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to grow to our level. We're still tiny, of course, but even this is the largest organization I've ever run. So. We're able to grow to this level. I think everyone's happier and enjoy the aspect of what they do more, which I think is ultimately the whole point of it, that our clients enjoy the process. Every one of our associates enjoy working with us. They're freelancers, so they have other responsibility in terms of other clients as well as family responsibilities. So we're not the end-all be-all of their lives, so we have to be an enjoyable process. So I think enjoyment and fulfillment and happiness, I mean, that's, it's ultimately what life is about, right? So, but also in terms of Phone Blogger, that's really what we're trying to provide for others is convenience and productivity. So I think that's really what we've gained internally and we've gained thus for our clients and enabled us to grow without letting our clients down.
Yeah, and with all this free time that you have, I'm curious, what areas of the business you now focus more attention on and why?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't have free time. It's utilized time. I'm sitting around doing nothing, but I am essentially meeting with potential clients all day long. So I'm the sales professional of the company.
Yeah.
I may not always be that person, and I may not only always be the only person, but I am very much the dominant sales professional for our company. And Mark also helps bringing clients as well. But because of he did a lot of operational work and a lot of other client work, so
yeah.
I'm out there trying to pavement all day long.
Oh, and yeah, and it does. There's nothing wrong with that because that's a high value use of your time. You know, bringing people
right.
in. But you know, now you can really focus on bringing as many people in as possible because you know you already have a production engine that is working. So, either way, it's still a great place to be.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, and so what would you say is the very next step that someone who has listened to this entire interview up to this point should do in order to get started, you know, creating a, you know, transforming their business so that it can actually run without them?
They can go to New Zealand and call my wife. That's really what transformed Phone Blogger. I'm sure my wife would like another free trip to New Zealand. But outside of that, maybe they can grab their own spouse and run off. But taking a vacation from the business, I think it's one of those awesome things to do for a variety of reasons. It really shows the cracks in a system. And
yeah.
if you have no system and you're not able to take a vacation, that's the first telltale. But honestly, it is doing that grunt work, either on tweet process or taking a pad and pen. But they have to sit down. And the hardest thing to do is that solo flight of writing everything down. So it's nice to do it with someone else.
Yeah.
And while I joke and I say I did it with my wife, truthfully, that was very important to do it with someone else. I think if I had done it just on my own, I would have missed things. And it would just be a tedious task to sit down and write every little detail. And you just kind of forget it. So bring your team or imagine you were bringing on someone and you're creating a process.
Yeah.
So it's, it's you're not going to get it right. You're not going to get it complete the first time. So go in knowing that and say, look, this is a iterative process where you're basically looking to continuously improve it. You got to start somewhere. And, you know, you're not going to run the marathon right away. Get on the treadmill and do it for a little bit. So that's really what I would suggest.
Yeah. And so what books will you say have influenced this, you know, you, the way this style of thinking that you have, what books will you say have influenced you the most and why?
So my father, who is a management consultant and a management science and got more degrees than a thermometer, he introduced me early on my career to The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Oh, okay.
And The E-Myth, and I'm sure you know The E-Myth, and I would highly suggest everyone really read The E-Myth. It really changes the mindset of looking at a business as a system. And I think it's extremely important to really understand. Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki and Cashflow Quadrant by Kiyosaki to understand the difference between being self-employed and creating a company or a small business that creates passive income
yeah.
also helped shape my thinking. The Checklist Manifesto is also great.
Atul Gawande, I love that book, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I was forgetting the doctor's name, so that's a great book to understand, again, from a very a real healthcare perspective, how checklists are used and able to create quality results. It's also between those three authors,
yeah.
Tremendously influenced, but definitely Kiyosaki and Gerber has his own world of management science thinking. That's a great place to get started in this
yeah.
concept.
Thanks for that, Les. And so is there a question that you were wishing that I asked during the interview, and for one reason or the other, I didn't ask you? So if so, pose the question and the answer.
We covered a lot. And so, yeah, I can't really think of another question that I would almost ask the listeners if they have a question. We run a fairly transparent company.
Mm-hmm.
Purposely, we like to teach people what we do and how we do it, especially clients and potential clients. So it's, the only other question is, so how can I get started with phoneblogger.net? And, of course, I'd welcome
yeah.
someone if they're interested and intrigued of how they could be more systematic with their word-of-mouth marketing enabled by the Internet.
Awesome. And so what would you say is the best way for the listener to connect with you? And thank you for doing the interview.
Sure. Email is best, vic@phoneblogger.net. That's vic@phoneblogger.net. That's probably the simplest way to connect with me. You can look up my full name, Vikram Rajan, on LinkedIn, and they can at me on Twitter if they'd like, but email is the simplest.
Awesome. So now I'm talking to you, the listener, who's been listening all the way to this point. If you've enjoyed this interview, I want you to leave us a positive review on iTunes. To do so, go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. The reason is, when you leave positive reviews about this podcast, other entrepreneurs will read it and say, okay, why did you leave such a good review? And check it out. And by checking it out, Sweet Process, the podcast, we get more listeners and more eyeballs, checking us out. And the more we're inspired to go out there to get entrepreneurs like Vikram to come on here and talk about how they've been able to systematize their business, and you get to go behind the scenes and learn ideas that you can actually implement in your business. If you found it useful, also make sure to share this interview with another entrepreneur. And finally, if you are at that stage in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck in your business and want to get everything out of your head so your employees know step by step what you know and deliver the results that you want, well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. Hey, Vikram, thanks for doing the interview.
Thank you, Owen. This was a pretty sweet process.
We're done.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.